This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
So even though these cases in Africa account for less than 3% of the global total, it's clear that the pandemic is accelerating. 10 of the 54 countries in Africa are currently driving the numbers, and they account for 75% of the total cases. 5 countries account for 71% of the total deaths.
That's the World Health Organization Regional Director for Africa on the rapid spread of COVID-19 in the continent. Details coming up. Also, an increased number of Nigerian children are in the labor force because schools have closed due to the pandemic. And South Sudan government officials who recovered from COVID-19 are sharing their experience. All these and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. The World Health Organization reports the COVID-19 pandemic is accelerating in Africa and moving from the continent's large capital cities into the remote rural areas, where it will be more difficult to contain the spread of the disease. Globally, there were more than 7 million coronavirus infections Wednesday, including more than 400,000 deaths. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Latest reports Wednesday put the number of confirmed cases of coronavirus in Africa at more than 200,000, including 5,000 deaths. World Health Organization Regional Director for Africa, Machidiso Moeti, notes it took 98 days to reach the first 100,000 cases and only 19 days to move to 200,000 cases.
So even though these cases in Africa account for less than 3% of the global total, it's clear that the pandemic is accelerating. 10 of the 54 countries in Africa are currently driving the numbers, and they account for 75% of the total cases. 5 countries account for 71% of the total deaths.
South Africa has the largest number of cases and deaths. Data show the majority of coronavirus deaths in the region follow a similar trend to that seen in Europe and the United States. That is, most who die are over age 60 and have underlying conditions such as diabetes, hypertension, and obesity. The pandemic arrived in Africa in February, later than in other parts of the world. Moeti says this gave countries precious time to prepare for the onset of the crisis. She says the experience gained from combating deadly diseases such as Ebola and HIV/AIDS has enabled countries to quickly scale up their health operations. She says these public health measures have been effective in slowing the spread of COVID-19 in Africa.
The stay-at-home orders and closing of markets and businesses have taken a heavy economic toll, particularly on the most vulnerable and marginalized communities. And we know that many African people work in the informal sector of the economy. So the need to balance between saving lives and protecting livelihoods is a key consideration in this response, and particularly so in Africa.
Africa faces many challenges. Moeti says one of the biggest is the lack of test kits and other supplies. She notes many essential health services are being neglected because of the focus on the pandemic. For example, she says vaccine, preventable disease campaigns, and regular immunizations against killer diseases have been reduced. She expects Africans will have to live with a steady increase of COVID-19 until there is access to an effective vaccine. However, she says the disease probably could be managed, so health systems are not overrun by people who are ill, if Africa gets the supplies and other international support it needs. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
An increased number of Nigerian children are in the labor force right now because schools have closed due to the coronavirus pandemic. Experts monitoring child labor in the country say since the pandemic shutdown, more children are working as hawkers, cleaners, or on city streets begging to earn money to help their families. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
Abubakar Mohammed is resuming work at an Abuja workshop where he has been learning carpentry and making furniture since he was 9 years old. Now 15, and with his school closed because of the coronavirus, he is working full-time to support his family, although he says he hopes to return to school soon.
I'm missing school. I just wait here for this coronavirus to go. And I'm just staying here to make some money so that when school resumes, I go back to school.
Abubakar is from a polygamous home and has five younger siblings. His mother welcomes the support, saying she decided to give him a head start on learning the craft. I told him to learn a handwork because there's no money at home, and when his father is no more, he'll be able to take care of his younger ones, she says. Child labor in Nigeria has been outlawed since 2003, but the practice remains widespread, especially among the country's poor. Valentine Nzi owns the workshop where Mohammed and six other boys are trying to make ends meet.
If their parents want to bring us to work under us, we don't collect money. We said we will look on their skills. We don't collect their money. Maybe at the end, the boys might not stay. They might not work. If they are serious, that's when we now bargain on, see what we want.
The International Labour Organization estimates 15 million Nigerian children are in the labour force, the highest total in West Africa. The ILO says Nigeria's relaxation of lockdown measures while keeping schools closed has triggered a rapid rise in the child labor rate. Agatha Kolawole is country program head of ILO's Accelerating Action for the Elimination of Child Labor, ACEL Africa.
Now that the lockdown has been lessened, that we have at least a level of movement, these children actually are out there working. So hearing ends meet for their family, to care for their home, and to be able to at least provide food for their families. So right now we have more children definitely out there working as laborers.
Child labor advocates say poverty and cultural perceptions are major obstacles to eliminating child labor in Nigeria. Even though Nigerian authorities are introducing online education models to keep children busy during this period, many, like Mohammed, have no access to online schooling, so they will continue to work as they wait for schools to reopen. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja.
Some South Sudan government officials who have recovered after testing positive for COVID-19 are sharing their experiences. They say people should not panic if they contract the coronavirus, but face it with courage like any other disease. Deputy Foreign Affairs Minister Deng Dao Deng, who recovered from the virus, says citizens should stop denying the disease exists in the country and work to contain its spread. Waki Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
Deputy Foreign Affairs Minister Deng Dao Deng was one of many members of the dissolved South Sudan high-level task force on COVID-19 that tested positive. Deng told the South Sudan in Focus last week that he recovered from the virus simply by following the advice of medical workers.
I followed the protocols on what I supposed to be doing, and I always called the Minister of Health just to tell them how the temperature, how the oxygen and all this in the body are. And so far, so good.
Deng says all South Sudanese should strictly follow the preventive measures advised by the WHO and the Health Ministry to contain the spread of the virus. South Sudan Information Minister Michael Makwe, another former COVID-19 task force member who recovered from the virus, says when he tested positive, he did not feel any symptoms of COVID-19. Makwe says while in isolation, he treated himself with aspirin and herbs.
This is natural lemon, the sour lemon, then the honey, the ginger, the garlic, the aloe vera. These are the things that I'm taking. They are naturally brought and they are boiled together. And after that, after boiling it, you add some original honey onto it and you take it. It is bitter, of course, but it is a treatment.
There is currently no known cure for COVID-19. but some herbs and certain foods are known to boost their immune system. Deng encourages South Sudanese need to realize that the disease exists in the country and should work to contain its spread.
Let us not be in denial. Let us not stigmatize people. It is something that has happened and people must accept it. And if we accept it, then it will be easy for us to get a cure for it and to help each other.
Makwe says some people who test positive for the coronavirus get frightened and their health status deteriorates, partly because of the stress caused by worrying about their outcome.
Because this thing has started in the first world, it has become, it is very seriously magnified to the extent that it has frightened everybody and people are in panic. So there are some people when they are informed that you have tested positive, they psychologically die. They die because of psychological impact that which they have already heard from others.
Deng says some good things came out of his period of self-isolation.
For the last 14 days, the geography of the house, I came to realize that I didn't know it very much. I didn't even know some of the family members well. And it gave me, so whenever we take it positive also, it could also be a learning process.
Makwe says people should adhere to all preventive measures, including frequent hand washing, practicing social distancing, and wearing face masks in public. South Sudan has recorded 1,606 positive cases of COVID-19, including 20 deaths and 15 recoveries, according to the health ministry. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Zimbabwe has announced a steep toll hike for commercial vehicles passing through Bethbridge Border Post, which transports companies use as the gateway to the Southern African route. Adigando gives us more on the report.
Zimbabwe's Transport and Infrastructure Development Minister Joe Bigimatiza, through a statutory instrument 127, said that the new regulations affect heavy vehicles that exceed 2,300 kgs, abnormal load heavy vehicles that exceed 56,000 kgs, and buses that carry more than 24 passengers. Vehicles registered outside Zimbabwe will have to pay in US dollars, while those registered in the country will pay in local currency at the prevailing interbank exchange rate. The ostensible reason is helping to pay for the port's US $241 million modernization project that was launched by President Mnangagwa in July 2018 and is expected to end in 2021. The increase takes effect then. Heavy vehicles will pay $100, goods vehicles $175, and abnormal load vehicles $300. The old rate was $23 per truck. Zimbabwe and South African border officials and government vehicles on official business will be exempt. Industry players feel that the timing is wrong given the depressed economic activity that has been worsened by the COVID-19 pandemic. Thousands of trucks cross the border ferrying goods on the shortest and most cost-effective route into SADC countries such as Malawi, DRC and Zambia. The president of the SADC Truck Drivers Association, Stanley Maluka, says that the Zimbabwe route has been the shortest and most cost-effective route for transporters carrying goods from South Africa into SADC. But he adds the business is already low and some members may look for alternative routes and that could cut driver income.
It all actually lies in the hands of the transporter, because it's the transporter that looks at the cost now of doing business. If he has to avoid Zimbabwe. And you know, when you avoid Zimbabwe, it means there is an increment in the route that you are taking. But of course, we're talking about fuel. But now the transporter, if he says, no, this route is taking too much money on the fuel. So, and if he or she cannot avoid passing through Zimbabwe, but to go by those, you know, rates that are going to be increased, he or she is going to see a way of reducing on the allowances of a driver. Normally, the drivers that are actually suffering. Our business has been affected negatively by this COVID issue. So you can't just increase because of trying to improve on the standard of the port.
Meanwhile, South African media have carried reports of stringent COVID-19 rules and alleged ill treatment of truck drivers at the country's border with Botswana. Zimbabwe has until recently been considered to have less stringent rules for transporters using the Bethbridge port. The Zimbabwe government says the modernization project is in tandem with its effort to ease doing business in the country. Efforts to call the Zimbabwe National Roads Authority Zinara for comment were unsuccessful as the phone went unanswered. Reporting for VOA, this is Adigondo.
Online learning during the coronavirus pandemic is providing opportunities to hundreds of students in northeast Kenya, where schools was cancelled even before COVID-19 as teachers fled terrorist attacks. The Al-Shabaab militant group killed 6 teachers and 4 students in Garissa County in January and March. But distance learning is allowing teachers and students to safely complete the school year, a practice that many in the area hope to continue after the pandemic. Mohamed Yusuf reports.
18-year-old Halima Abdinur, a high school student in Garissa, northeastern Kenya, says all she needed was online learning to finish her education.
We only covered 3 chapters, and in physics, it is always 10 chapters in every form. So we were really behind in that subject. And after these online classes, just 2 months, we have finished and we even did revision.
Abinur's school closed in January when instructors backed by the Teacher Service Commission, or TSC, withdrew from the area due to insecurity. All schools in Kenya closed in mid-March due to the COVID-19 pandemic. The shutdown left Abinur feeling helpless.
It was really very hard for us. We were so worried. And, you know, we have been waiting for this year. It was our final year. We have been struggling since primary, then secondary. And then it was our final year, and we had no teachers. So, of course, we have been very worried. So this lockdown became another problem for us.
But with a smartphone and internet, students can learn and finish their coursework. Mustafa Kasim is one of the teachers helping students like Abdinur with their online studies. He says in just 2 months, the students' mood changed from hopelessness to joy.
The last 2 months, we've actually been able to run through because we were having about 4 days in a week, 2 hours. And we were able to run through all the topics that they were supposed to have done. So they were in despair. They didn't know if this would actually work. And by the end of the day, after the 2 months, they were happy, actually. They actually joined the group.
Fatuma Dubo of the Northern Innovation and Empowerment Hub, an organization that helps women and youth in the region, says online learning can save students in the area now and in the future.
Northeastern is still insecure, and of teachers from TSC, of course, will not be posted there again, and there'll be issues. And so this is something that will continue post-COVID. And our plan, of course, is to now work directly with the schools and, you know, to have proper tech setups and to have teachers from other areas of Kenya still support these kids.
The Garissa-based organization, which consists of professionals from the region, has hired 3 science teachers to help high school candidates to prepare for their exams. John Kemuru teaches chemistry. He says the students can benefit from the current program even when schools reopen.
This is something that you can even teach when you're far from each other, and therefore you can be able to reach them. As long as there is that online platform that is continuing, the students will be much, very much catered for. So I think it's going to help them much after even you resume school.
Garissa, Mandera and Wajir counties have experienced numerous terror attacks targeting schools, government facilities and security forces. In the worst incident, Al-Shabaab attacked Garissa University College in 2014, killing 150 people, most of them students. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
In South Africa, they're calling them the singing doctors, and a video of the medical practitioners encouraging their compatriots during the COVID-19 pandemic has gone viral in their homeland. The song's been released as infections in South Africa are topping 53,000 with 1,200 deaths. Darren Taylor reports.
The organizer of the initiative, Dr. Daniel Israel, says the coronavirus has many South Africans seeing healthcare facilities as dangerous places.
We've almost instilled a fear in patients of going to their doctor that stopped them from looking after their chronic conditions. So doctors felt very much that we wanted to protect and educate our patients, but we're not able to make sufficient contact with them. We're still feeling this.
During the most intense part of the country's lockdown, when most people were confined to home, 150 doctors, including Israel, linked up on a WhatsApp group.
We needed to do some kind of positive project that would lift the morale of doctors and show our patients that we were there for them.
Israel, a music lover, decided it was time for a song.
I posed the idea to the group of 150 doctors, and I asked for musical doctors and people who would have the mental and emotional space to step out of their comfort zone to get involved. The song we chose is called Voices That Care. It's a song actually written in America when the American troops went out to Iraq in 1991. And it's a song that encourages people to stand forward and care, really like a type of anthem.
Choir master Joel Saffer offered to help.
We auditioned people we had never met on the phone. We classified them into voice groups.
Saffer worked with 30 doctors on technique, collecting 200 voice tracks. A musical arranger sorted the final selections. Then the video was produced.
We used doctors recording themselves in their place of work. We wanted this to be a song that showed the public that doctors are in their place of work, reaching out to them.
In the film, some of the practitioners are draped in stethoscopes in surgeries. Some wear theatre gowns and rubber gloves. Israel says he and his colleagues want the song to say, it's okay to be worried about COVID-19, but don't put your overall well-being at risk because of that anxiety.
I worry more about the risks of neglecting health problems that are already there than the public risk of getting COVID in South Africa at the moment. So
Israel says many doctors, accustomed to fixing health problems, are battling mentally with the fact that they can't give people medicine to cure coronavirus. He adds that he and his fellow general practitioners can only do their best, given the situation.
Our challenges are keeping our patients engaged, looking for the risks, in terms of finding the patients who could be COVID positive and protecting other patients and ourselves from them, and treating them at home so that they can get back into the world safely.
Israel has mixed feelings about doctors being called heroes as they confront the virus.
There's so many videos out there thanking the front line and clapping for the NHS in the UK. But at the end of the day, we want to show patients that we realize that each of them are heroes because they have to carry on their normal lives and fight COVID with no medical background.
Israel's forum next plans to roll out evidence-based education about coronavirus as they try to protect their patients at a time when infections are spiking in South Africa. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Close your eyes to
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suwohibi in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thanks for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.